Jamie, it's a tremendously exciting moment. It's Into Your Head, number 99. That means it's the last ever two-digit episode of Into Your Head. There's not going to be any more two-digit episodes. The next one's going to have three digits. Now, admittedly, two of those will be zeros, but that's a temporary arrangement. You'll find that all three digits will start moving upwards in due course. Now the first digit, the one, that'll be there for at least the next 100 episodes. So don't get too excited about that. But the other two digits will increase rather frequently. The third digit will increase with every episode, and the second digit will increase with every 10th episode. So we're moving ahead here, Into Your Head. We're moving onwards and upwards. We're moving into the bicentennial set of episodes, and as far as I'm concerned, it's absolutely fantastic. It's all for the best. I see nothing negative about any of that whatsoever. It's basically advancement. It's like the advancement of time, and it's like when the horse-drawn carriage got replaced by the car, and then the car got replaced by the flying car, and then the flying car got replaced by the spaceship that can go on roads when necessary for short shopping trips. Now that's all in the future, but that's the point, really. The future is all about advancement, and the past is all about recession into the past. But that's if you're going backwards through it, which you wouldn't be. If you were in the past, you wouldn't be going backwards through it. You'd be going forwards through it. So you'd still be advancing in towards the future. So you can't escape going forwards. No matter what you do, you can go back into a time travel machine and go back to the year 1850, and you'd still find that time would be moving forwards, not backwards, unless you continue to travel backwards at the same rate as time moves forwards. Well, of course, then you'd get stuck in the same place forever. It'd be like being on a boat that's going against the wind and, well, against the current. The current is going the other way, and you're going against the current at the same speed. So basically, you're getting nowhere, although you are really, in effect, travelling along the water. You're still at the same latitude and longitude. Although, of course, you take into account then that the Earth is flying through space, then you are moving through space. But that's not something you're going to notice, because that's us humans for you. We don't notice that we're flying through space at 8 million miles an hour and spinning around the sun at breakneck speed. If the sky above us isn't moving and the land that we can see on the horizon isn't moving, then we think we're sitting perfectly still. And I suppose we have to think like that for our sanity, or else we'd never be able to get to sleep at night. We'd go around thinking, I'm spinning around the Earth at 8 million miles an hour. I can't sleep, but I'll get travel sickness if I try to sleep now, so I'm going to stay awake all night. So you can't be doing that, because you have to sleep. That's ridiculous. No one ever gets travel sickness just from being asleep because of the Earth's movement, just because the Earth is travelling through space at 3 million miles an hour. We're all used to that. We're human beings who've adapted over millions of years to a moving Earth. That's where you're wrong. I had travel sickness the other night. I got up in the middle of the night and the room was spinning. And I'm not usually aware of the room spinning. Usually when the room spins, I don't even notice it. But the other night I did. I noticed the room was spinning. Presumably the whole Earth was spinning, as it usually does. It spins on its axis non-stop for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, leap years included. But on this particular occasion, I was aware of the Earth's movement. And the whole, well, I couldn't see. Obviously, I couldn't see out to the horizon from my bed. Because the blinds and the curtains were closed. But from what I could see of the room, in the semi-lightness, the room appeared to be spinning, just as the Earth was, whereas it's not usually spinning. Now, usually, presumably, we counteract this by setting our brain to imagine that we are spinning counterclockwise in the opposite direction to the Earth's movement and at the exact same speed. And that's how we managed to trick ourselves into thinking that the Earth isn't spinning at all. But presumably on this occasion I had fallen into such a deep sleep that my brain had forgotten to do the synthesized counterclockwise spinning, and that's why I was able to notice that everything was spinning around me. So the only cure was to go back to sleep. So I went back to sleep, but not after having some travel sick, not before having some travel sickness, QED, quod ete demonstrandum. That's Latin. It's what you put when you're writing a maths theory and you've proved something. You've proved that the square on the hypotenuse is equal to the sum of the square on the opposite three sides. You're meant to write QED after that, which means it's Latin for which was to be proved. I've proved what I was asked to prove. That's what we used to put at the end of our maths questions when I was in school. At the receiving end of the education system, the maths teacher who was obsessed with Latin, unfortunately Latin wasn't taught anymore in that school, so he had to teach maths, so he couldn't get away with teaching it through Latin. Well, he probably could, but he'd be afraid that the average result of his class in the exams as a result of teaching through Latin would be lower than what was reasonably expected and demanded of him. So he had to make do with just getting everyone to put a bit of Latin at the end of their problem solving. So they put quod ete demonstrandum, or QED for short. And he tells us all, that's Latin. I've taught you three words of Latin now. I hope you're grateful. You get all this maths. You get taught maths to higher level, junior certificate level, or intermediate certificate level, as it was called then in my day, because I did the last ever intermediate certificate in Ireland before they changed it into the junior certificate. Anyway, this guy, he comes along and says, I've taught you all the maths you need for this exam, so you can't really complain if I give you three words of Latin and have you learn those as well. It's a little bonus. It's like if you go and buy some deodorant and you get a little test-size bottle of aftershave for free. You don't go saying, I don't want that, don't give me that, that's extra to what I want, how dare you give me this extra item for free. We didn't say how dare you teach me three words of Latin. I didn't sign up for Latin classes. Just teach me the maths that you're meant to teach me. Because if you said that, he'd say, I've taught you all the maths, we've got 5 seconds left in the last class session of the year, and I'm not allowed to finish the class early, so I might as well use the 5 seconds to teach you something extra. So here's three words of Latin, QED. Of course, by the time he said all that, the class was 10 seconds late in finishing. So he got into tremendous trouble for that. He was told, you didn't finish your class on time, you're not getting your bonus this year. But he got his bonus anyway. The headmaster was just joking with him, because the headmaster likes a joke. He should have gone to clown school or something. He should have done what that guy who died last week, the guy who went and sold the rights to Bozo the Clown all over America. He ran a clown school and he taught people how to be a clown. That's what that headmaster should have done. He should have taught clowniness and comedy. And then we'd have found out whether he was any good at it, or whether he just had one or two little one-liners stored up inside him, waiting for an opportunity to use them. I'll tell you, that separates the cats from the mice. I mean, when you put people, you make them teach what they're claiming to know, and then you find out, I can tell you. Yeah, so anyway, as I said, this is the show number 99 of Into Your Head, the last ever two-digit episode. Now, I know what you're thinking there. You're thinking there was no show 79 or 78 or something because of a technical problem. Well, that's not true. Well, it is true, but I've decided to declare it to be untrue. I'm like when the Pope comes along and declares a marriage null and void. It never happened. I'm declaring that incident never happened. As far as I'm concerned, I've basically gone back and changed the past. So if you go back and listen to show 79 now, you'll find that it does exist. It may well sound like a little service announcement saying there is no show 79, or it may just look like a blank space with no show 79 in it, but it is there. If you can't see it, it means you're burying your head in the sand, you're turning a blind eye. and then you're covering up your non-blind eye, and you're burying your head in the sand like an ostrich, and then you're eating sand, so that probably causes you to burn. It probably causes your eyeballs to burn or something, and that'll distract you, so you won't be able to see. Even if you take your head up out of the sand, you won't be able to see anything, because your eyes will be full of sand. They'll be burning hot, like burning hot cinders that have been touched with a poker, except you'll probably recover at some point. I've never heard of anyone dying or becoming blind from having some sand in their eyes. If that was the case, the lifeguards who you see at your local seaside beaches, they wouldn't be patrolling the water, they'd be patrolling the beach, they'd be watching out for people getting drowned in sand. But no, they don't do that. They watch out for people getting drowned in water and hopefully prevent it by swimming. If they see someone who looks like they're drowning, they jump into the water and they go and swim over to the person, and they say, "Do you need assistance?" And if the person answers and says, "No, I don't need assistance, thank you," then they just go away. But if the person doesn't reply at all, they automatically assume that the person needs assistance, because for all they know, the person could be so far gone that they're not able to speak anymore, or maybe they're dead already and they're a zombie, and that's why they can't speak. So the lifeguard has to assume the worst. So if the person doesn't reply when ask whether they need rescuing or not, the lifeguard goes ahead and rescues them anyway and asks questions later. When they wake up in hospital, you can say, "Did you need rescuing at all, or was it a false alarm?" Either way, it's okay. I raised the false alarm because I'm the lifeguard, so you won't get in trouble over it. It's just assuming the worst as a precaution, as a just in case. Either way, it was good practice for me. I'll probably end up getting a medal for this from someone. I don't know where. I think there's a shop that sells medals. If it comes to that, if no one offers me a medal, I can go and buy one and award it to myself in a ceremony in front of my cat. But I probably wouldn't tell you about it if I did that, because that would defeat the purpose of the pride that's instilled in me. From people seeing me with my medal on me, I can't just say I awarded it to myself. Unless, of course, I'm the head of the lifeguard authority, and it's my job to award myself a medal. In which case, I suppose that would be legitimate. But people would be rather cynical about it. They'd say, "You shouldn't be awarding yourself medals." And they'd also say to me, when I'm wearing my other hat, they'd say, "You shouldn't be receiving medals from yourself." So I'd be contradicted on both fronts. When I'm wearing my head of the Lifeguard Association's hat, I'd be accused of giving a medal to myself, and when I'm wearing my lifeguard who received a medal hat, I'd be accused of receiving a medal that I didn't deserve, because the person awarding it to me was me. So either way, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. But I suppose it's okay, because a person's life gets saved, or a person's death gets prevented, and it's all heavy. It's all worthwhile. That's what we're trying to say there.
Hi, I'm a mouse, and I like cheese. But I don't believe in the conspiracies. The other mice say that the cheese has a trap. And I don't believe that.
Well, I'm a big giant from the Fionn McCool stories. And I set the traps. So you better believe it. The Illuminati are real.
The Illuminati aren't real. They're just guys going around with loads of money, doing what they want to do, when they want to do it. I suppose next you're going to tell me that 9/11 was an inside job as well.
How little you know, little one. Go to conspiracast.com for more.
Conspiracast.com? That sounds good. Conspiracast.com? That's brilliant. Conspiracast.com, really? I better go eat me cheese.
Yeah, well, I know what you're thinking there. You're thinking, I know that's what you're trying to say there, but sometimes when you can't put something into words, it's better to put it into a song. And frankly, I'm inclined to agree with you. So here we go. So I'll try and put it into a song now. We'll call it, I don't know, we'll call it Ostrich in the Sand. Hold on a minute. Oh, the lifeguard can't win with the zombie ostriches. as referred to in the previous segment in more detail. The ostrich can't win when he tries to save the lifeguard can't win when he tries to save the life of someone who's got their head buried in the sand and who's not really an ostrich, but it's kind of like an ostrich because he's acting like an ostrich and that he's got his head in the sand, and then the lifeguard tries to save him, but the lifeguard can't award himself a medal because then he gets accused of, well, he gets accused quite rightly, if you ask me, of rewarding himself a medal, which is what he has done if he's rewarded himself a medal. But it's suggested in the accusing tone that there's something bad about that, which there may well be. So anyway, that's why the lifeguard can't win with regard to saving ostriches or anyone else, especially if they're the head of the ostrich of the lifeguard association and they award, they're the person in charge of awarding medals. So I suppose the best solution for that lifeguard would be to, once they get to the top of the lifeguard association, make a promise to themselves not to award themselves medals and just be happy with the sense of achievement that they get from the job and the large paycheck, if any. I don't know if lifeguards are voluntary at that senior management level. Maybe they're not. Maybe someone pays them. I don't know. It's time for a brand new segment. There's no point starting it off by trying to continue off on with the previous one by saying something like, "Now I know what you're thinking there," or just continuing off with where the last piece of intermediate music. There's no point doing that because I've been going on now for 14 minutes and 51 seconds on pretty much the same series of topics, and sometimes you have to just draw a line in the sand and then start a new piece of sand and hope that the line doesn't amount to a little groove into which a lot of the sand collapses and then the line basically disappears, because then the line is no use at all. I suppose the best way is to get some paint and paint the line in the sand. Even that's going to be only temporary, because of course the sand will move around at night when there's a gust of wind. So, but I suppose if you're just there for a couple of hours, if you're on a school tour, you're a teacher and you want to stop for lunch for a couple of hours on the beach and play some beach volleyball with the kids, and then you can paint a line in the sand, and that'll work if you want to mark out a volleyball court for a couple of hours. Just be sure it's not a windy day. Now, how are you going to do that? I don't know, because these school tours are planned weeks in advance, and you can't just say we'll pick a day that's not going to be windy, because that's not going to work. So I suppose the best way out of that is to have planned the game of volleyball, but also plan something that's not on the beach for that can be done if it's windy, and then decide we're going to either play beach volleyball or we're going to go up to the bandstand beside the beach and play, squash, or play, what's that thing where there's just one person and they've got a tennis racket and a ball and they just hit the ball against the wall. Now, I suppose you'd want to be just have a class of one for that, or else everyone takes turns and watches each other. You've probably turned it into a science class, and people can measure the angle or measure the size of the triangle that's formed between the space along the ground from the person who's hitting the ball to the wall. That can be the base of the triangle. The wall itself can be the back of the triangle, and then the angle at which the ball is hit from the person to the top of the wall. Although that doesn't work, because the person isn't hitting, the ball isn't starting on the ground, it's starting at the person's hand where they're holding the racket. So that's going to be a four-sided shape. That's not going to work at all. That mightn't be clear to you, so I'm not sure if I'm explaining that very well. So I'll draw a diagram and I'll put it in the album artwork for this week, and that'll explain it for you. In fact, I'll do it now, bear with me. I've got Microsoft Paint open. I'm going to draw this little diagram. Let's see, first I'll make a little matchstick person. That's his head. This is body. Now, when you look at this, this matchstick person is going to look rather skinny. I'm not promoting fad dieting. talking. I'm not trying to encourage eating disorders. This is just how you draw a matchstick person. They look particularly skinny. It's not intentional. Now, I'll just draw the wall and the ground. Now, it's starting to look like a game of Hangman, so I'll use red for the triangular shape that I'm referring to that turns out not to be triangular. Let's see. Where's the person? Okay, there's the person's hand. So we draw the base of the triangle here, and then we draw the back of the triangle, and then we draw a line going down to the person's hand, and then this, and I'll just write in for illustrative purposes, this is not a triangle. This is not a triangle. Listen to show for explanation. So there you go, and I'll just write in the word ground at the ground. GROUND, and I'll write in wall where the wall is. It should be obvious, but maybe it's not. Surely with the combination of this illustration and my explanation which you've just heard, it should all be obvious. Well, maybe not. And anyway, we'll just save this for now, and I'll trim it later, because I don't want to bore you with the drawing of the diagrams. I should really do this before my lecture, but this stuff isn't planned. I didn't know that I was going to talk about this subject today, so I'm sorry I have to write the illustrations as I go along. Now, where am I going to save this? I'll save it in here. That's what I'll do. Because show 99, pick, save. And there, that's that done. So that should, if you're listening on an iPod now, just go into the album art and you should see the illustration, and that will explain to you what's going on here. And so it should all be perfectly obvious now. Hopefully it is. If it's not, I don't know what to do. I'll have to do, I'm not going to devote show 100 to a further explanation, because that's a special show, and that's going to have special content. And I don't want to mess that up. So either you get it now, or you don't get it at all, or you go off and do your own research. I don't know which, but there you go. Now, I know what you're thinking there. You're thinking, anything on the internet or on my MP3 player or otherwise that has album art should in theory amount to an album. And in order to amount to an album, you have to have more than one song. If it's just one song, it's just an individual song or a single or whatever you call it. It's not an album. That's against the Trade Descriptions Act of most respectable countries. And there's only one song in this whole show so far. So in order to legitimately have an album art picture inserted, that illustration that I was talking about just now, that'll be the album art. Now, I have to have at least two songs in the show for it to be legitimately referred to as an album. Now, it'll be a mini album, but that's fine. It'll be like an EP, as they used to call it in the 80s. It's not, don't worry, it's not going to be like a single that's got a crap B-side on it. It's going to be a proper mini album with two decent songs, and this will be the second one that I'm going to do now. So here it goes. Oh, B-side, B-side, this is a song for the seaside. B-side, B-side, this is a song for the B-side. Not the seaside, but you can listen at the seaside, but it's on the B-side. In order for there to be a seaside, there would have to be three sides on a record. And it's not even on a record, it's on an MP3 file, and that doesn't even have two sides. So really, it's not the B-side, because everything's all on one side. Suppose it's like a CD, really. We should be used to it after the 90s. Records went away in the 80s, so we didn't have B-sides when we had during the CD era. So by the time we got to MP3s, we should have been used to that, really. So maybe we are. Maybe now we're used to one-sided MP3 albums like this. So this is all the A-side, really. So it's A-side, A-side. This is a song for the A-side. It's a B-song for the A-side. You could possibly listen at the seaside, but it's not compulsory. Where's my harmonica? Where's my harmonica? Something, something, something. Where's my harmonica? Here it is. I'll just take it out of the container. Uh, side, A side. This is a B side, but it's really an A side technically. Depends which way you look at it. You could also look at it as a C side, but that would be inaccurate, and I can't think of any way to justify that. So it's either an A side or a B side, depending on whether you're in the 80s or the zeros. I suppose if you're in the 19 zeros, it could be the B-side still. Did Gramophone Records have a B-side? I don't know. They probably did, or else they had a blank B-side with nothing on it, because people hadn't discovered B-sides yet. And we're back, really, with that, with the digital high-density DVDs discs. A lot of them don't have a B-side, even though they can. You can store stuff on both sides, but a lot of people don't. Oh, B-side, B-side, this is a song about the A-stroke B-side, B-stroke A-side, A-stroke B, B-stroke A, A-stroke B, B-stroke A, something, 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 the end.
If you would like to comment on any of the issues raised in today's programme, visit the Stalkers Forum guestbook
and online voicemail system
at our website, intoyourhead.com, or email us at studio@intoyourhead.com.